Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I hope you're having a great week. Okay, so Greg's family from Indianapolis is in town, and so I felt inspired to do a story from Indiana. Actually, this one is from Indianapolis, and it's a very, very creepy story. Now, I've heard this story before, but mostly through the haunting of Fox Hollow Farms. But I never really looked into the reason why it was so haunted. I mean, I loosely knew, but digging into it more, this is the story of a serial killer you may have never heard of. Herb Baumeister. It's going to be so hard for me not to say Herb, but it's Herb. But I apologize if I keep going back and forth. But when I say that you may never have heard of him, maybe you have, but I asked every single member of Greg's family from Indianapolis, and none of them had ever heard of this guy. And they lived there during this time. So this is the story of Herb Baumeister. And trigger warning, it's pretty graphic. So who is Herb? Well, he was born April 7th, 1947, in Westfield, Indiana, a suburb of Indianapolis. Growing up, his childhood was fairly normal. I believe his dad was verbally and physically abusive to him, which isn't great at all. But what he became is far worse. He did exhibit antisocial personality disorder as a kid, and he was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia, according to some sources, but there's really no documentation to completely back that up. One of the things that his classmates said that was very strange about him is he would ask them if they were ever curious about what it would taste like to drink another human's urine. He also once peed on his teacher's desk. They also said that he was obsessed with dead animals and he would play with them. So I guess I go back to my first statement and said his childhood was fairly normal. I guess maybe his childhood was fairly normal. He was clearly not normal growing up. When he was in his teens, his dad sent him to a mental institution. And this is where allegedly he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, but like I said, there's really no documented evidence to back that up. When he entered his early 20s, he attended university, and maybe in an attempt to impress his father or follow in his father's footsteps, who was a physician, he studied anatomy at college, but also kind of a strange red flag. He was always trying to people please, and he was overly helpful. One of his classmates said, though, that he made people uneasy. His over-eagerness to be such a people-pleaser and so helpful kind of made people uneasy. He was a staunch Republican and was a very sharp dresser. He used his sharp dressing and, you know, being really buttoned up as a way to also sort of, like, impress people. He was always interested in impressing people or standing out. And one of the ways he attempted to stand out or creep people out is he drove a hearse outfitted with a siren. And he was actually driving that when he met his first wife, Julie, who apparently found him different and interesting. And she also liked him because they were both young Republicans, which was very different from the time. See, this was like this, you know, the 60s where it was counterculture. And so they kind of bonded over being staunch Republicans. They eventually marry in 1971 and go on to have three children. Now, this is odd, or she's just very fertile and he's got good sperm, but She would later claim that they only had sex 6 times in their entire marriage. She also claims that she never saw him naked in their entire marriage because they would have sex in the pitch black, and the only time he was naked would be in the bathroom by himself. And he also slept like in full pajamas. Like I'm picturing like a silk button-up situation. But apparently he was very ashamed of his skinny body. At least that's what he told her. Maybe you'll come to find out that he was not necessarily interested in women. He was sort of just playing the part of the suburban husband and suburban dad. He was also very controlling and very hard on his wife, Julie. He didn't want her to have friends, and he would create these impossible tasks for her. One year, on Christmas, he wanted to have a 40-foot Christmas tree, and it had to be exact, and she needed to help him pick it out. Kind of an impossible and extravagant task. The other weird thing about his obsession with Christmas and Christmas trees is one of his rules in the house is there had to be a fully decorated Christmas tree up year-round. Early in their marriage, he bounced around to different jobs, and his dad eventually got him a government job at like a DMV type of thing. And he was actually like the kind of like a head supervisor type person. And his co-workers, similar to his classmates, would say he would always go above and beyond for them. At one point, he drove one of his employees 140 miles or something out of the way to a bank because she was having some financial issues. And long drives and disappearing would be another mark of Herb Baumeister. He would often do this alone, just disappear and drive hundreds of miles. While married to Julie, who he was married to for 25 years, and you're going to be very freaked out when you find out the crimes he was doing while married to her. While married to Julie, he goes into his second stint in a mental institution. And this institution was triggered by a car accident he got in one of those long, long drives. And he just sort of had some sort of mental break. There are theories that maybe on that drive, he was starting to explore his sexuality. He was already going to gay bars, unbeknownst to Julie, and kind of, you know, poking around with that. But it's possible he started to maybe give into his urge to kill or his extreme erotic fantasies or something on one of these long drives, and it triggered a mental break in him. Maybe he wanted to shut off the fact that he was in the closet. Maybe he wanted to shut off the fact that he was having the urge to kill, and thought maybe the stay in this mental institution would kind of snap him out of it. Well, that was not to be. He left way worse than when he went in. Around this time, too, he became very, like, he would brag a lot. He would tell people, like, do you know how much this shirt costs? And, like, he would talk about, like, how expensive his clothes were, and he started spending a ton of money. And he lost his job. Not because he peed on his boss's desk, which he did. He lost the job because he peed on a letter to the Indiana state governor. And that was when they were like, I think it's time for you to go, Herb. So then he bounced around from different jobs here and there. And at a certain point, he worked at a thrift store, which gave him the idea to start his own, in his mind, upscale franchise, I guess, or chain of thrift stores. I think he envisioned them to be more consignment stores. But here's the thing. Herb was a hoarder of really weird things. And so in his thrift store, there were very odd things. And when the family finally moved to Fox Hollow Farms, which we'll get into the timeline of that, he started collecting bizarre, really disgusting things like used human toilet paper. That's just one example, but we'll get to the rest. So he gets this idea to start this chain of upscale thrift stores. And he gets his mom to loan he and his wife $35,000 to open their first one. And they do. And it looks like it's called Save-A-Lot, but it was pronounced, because they took the E off, Save-A-Lot. I don't know if they were trying to make it like sound French and fancy. But they opened their first one in 1988 off of that $35,000 loan from his mother. Allegedly, in their first year with that store, they made enough money to open a second store. Though his wife realized that he was very strange, What she didn't know is during this time of their success, this boom where they're making money on these thrift stores, her husband had already started murdering young gay men and teenagers and would go on to become one of the most prolific serial killers in Indiana history. Many believe that he was the I-70 strangler, along with the confirmed killings of the young men and boys they found buried on his property, but we'll go into that. So he was most likely the I-70 strangler. So think about all those miles he was driving. So in the 1980s, many young men and boys were going missing from local gay bars. In all, the bodies of 11 teenagers and adults were found partially naked and strangled off of the I-70. Many near train tracks, many near streams, but not far off of the I-70. But what made it hard to catch Erb was because he was not the only man murdering young gay men in the 1980s. A man named Larry Eiler was also torturing and murdering young men from 1982 to 1984. And remember, John Wayne Gacy was also murdering around this time, upwards of 33, but there's probably more you can attribute to John Wayne Gacy and maybe even Erb. But that was happening in Illinois, Indiana, not that far from each other. And that Larry guy was also murdering in Illinois. So it made it very confusing and very hard to catch Erb during this time. And it's Herb, not Herb, dang it. So around this time in 1991, after the success of their first two stores, they move to Fox Hollow Farms in 1991. This place was massive. It had 10,000 square feet, 15 rooms. It was a Tudor-style mansion with a pool in the basement. And once moving there, it is thought that most of his murders were committed in that pool, which is extremely eerie.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
While a beautiful house, it was absolutely disgusting. It became a hoarder house. So much so that he had an infestation of raccoons living in the attic that would pee on the walls, on the floor, and it got so bad that one of the ceilings in one of the rooms actually collapsed from the pee. Just horrifying. And he was just letting them live there. And remember, he was hoarding disgusting things like used human toilet paper. He was also obsessed with, like, old political stickers. Like, one time his wife said that he dug an old, like, vote for Nixon sticker out of the trash just to have it. And his thrift store business started failing around this time, but he was still spending a lot of money. Part of the reason why it was failing, you see, so his wife ran one of the thrift stores and he ran the other. And employees said that he would just disappear in the middle of the day, and oftentimes he would show back up with a male friend and liquor on his breath, and then him and the male friend would continue to drink in the store all day. Around the time that he moved to Fox Hollow Farms is also around the time that the I-70 strangler stopped disposing of bodies along the I-70. Which, it's likely no coincidence, because he began murdering, and disposing of bodies on Fox Hollow Farms. You see, the bodies being disposed along the I-70, sure, they stopped. But gay men and teenagers going missing in Indianapolis from gay bars did not stop. At a certain point, the FBI formed a task force to find whoever the I-70 strangler was or why all of these young men and teenagers were going missing. But they eventually closed it down because they said they didn't have enough information or enough resources to track down these boys. Probably because this was the 1980s and they were a very marginalized community, which is just horrible and so sad to think about. It's so unfair. However, one young man kind of took it into his own hands. You see, his friend was one of the dozens to have gone missing. This man's name was Tony Harris, and he's the one that gives us a peek into Herb's life. And he might have been the only male companion of Herb's to survive visiting Fox Hollow Farms. So Tony meets Herb at a bar, but Herb was going by the name Brian Smart. Who knows if it was Tony who convinces Herb to go back with him, or if Herb was already hitting on Tony. But Tony suspected, for whatever reason, that this could be the guy responsible for his friend going missing. So he decides to go back to Herb's house with him. He rides in Herb's car, leaving his at the bar, thinking that if he goes missing and he never comes back to retrieve his car, people will start looking for him. So he goes to Herb's. Herb claims that the house they were going to was that of his employer's, and his employer was out of town. He also tells him when they arrive that the upstairs area, all the lights had been shut off and, you know, they had no way of, you know, hanging out up there. So he invites him down to the basement to the pool area. Right when they get down there, the first thing Tony notices is the pool is surrounded by mannequins. And he asks Herb about this. He's like, what are the mannequins for? And Herb creepily responds that he has them there because sometimes he gets lonely when he's at that house. And these are essentially his friends. And Tony must have wanted to start sprinting out of there. But he stays. And he stays sober. So Herb initially tries to offer him some cocaine, to which Tony declines. And then Herb repeatedly keeps trying to get him to drink, to which Tony also declines, which irritated Herb. Herb then leaves the room for a little bit and comes back really amped up. Seemingly probably had done a few lines of cocaine. And he just starts talking and talking and talking and talking. And Tony is politely listening to this guy's life story. Eventually, Herb says to Tony, do you want to see a neat trick? Which is very eerie to me because John Wayne Gacy would pull something like this. He would do something where he would tell the people he'd brought back to his house, like, see if you can get me out of these handcuffs or see if you can get me out of this, like, you know, tie thing. I might not be getting that exactly right, but there was some sort of trick involved. But Herb's idea of a neat trick was autoerotic asphyxiation. So he tells Tony, you know, you don't know how wonderful it is, like what a rush you get and how, like, what, you know, what an orgasm you get when you choke someone, you know, during sex. And he also said that their lips turn the most beautiful color blue, which Tony really should have left at that point. But Herb somehow convinces Tony to get into the pool with them and try this neat trick. And Herb grabs a rubber kind of tube type thing and wraps it around Tony's neck. And he starts choking him. Tony starts to kind of feel like he's about ready to pass out or lose consciousness. And he starts to freak out. But he plays it cool. And so he pretends to pass out and falls into the water. Herb lets go. Tony then jumps out of the water and he starts strangling Herb. Herb then also passes out and he falls into the water, But then, like a horror movie, comes to and is like, whoa, that was a crazy, that was such a, you know, crazy rush. That felt so good. And he's like, but you did it wrong. You're not supposed to let me like fall into the water. Like, you're supposed to keep me above water when that happens. And so they both get out of the water and they're sitting next to the pool. And somehow Herb convinces Tony to try this again. And he's like, I'm going to teach you like the right way to do it. Like, you're going to love this. Like, there's rules. You got to do it the right way. Okay. So Herb then chokes Tony again as Tony pleasures himself. And then Tony returns the favor to Herb. Herb is elated. He thinks this is like the greatest date. And he convinces Tony to stay the night there. And Herb falls asleep, to which Tony stays up all night, just terrified, but wanting to be, like, to get the chance or the courage to look around the house and see if there's any evidence that his friend had been there. He also sneaks away and calls his sister, tells her where he's at, and says that this guy is not right. Well, morning comes around, and Herb gets up and tells Tony he needs to go run an errand. So he leaves Tony in his house alone, which gives Tony the opportunity to look around. So Tony goes upstairs, and he said it was absolutely disgusting. Like, it smelled horrible. It was packed head to toe with just awful random shit. And Tony notices a huge stack of videotapes and, you know, camera equipment. And Tony's thinking, is it possible that Herb, you know, videotapes his victims? Well, Tony didn't get the time to actually look through those tapes and play them because Herb shows back up. He returns from his errand and he offers to drive Tony home, to which Tony agrees and he drives him back to his car he had left at the gay bar. Tony agrees that they exchange numbers, and Herb says that he had a really good time with Tony and that Tony was a really good sport and, you know, learned how to play that game, and they eventually went their separate ways. So after he allegedly stopped dumping bodies off the I-70, he began scattering the remains around his property at Fox Hollow Farms. You see, he would burn the flesh off of the bones and then scatter them above ground like an idiot. I don't know why he would do that, after he would crush them. So he would crush them to try to conceal it, which, when he was doing this, pretty much, I'm sure every murder he committed, I can't imagine he did one when she was home, but she might have just been so oblivious and he was down there in the basement with one of his friends. But she would also go out of town a lot with the kids. Tony's mom had this lake house, you know, an hour or so away from Indianapolis, and so she would go there very, very frequently with the kids and go hang out with Herb's mom. And it's pretty likely that every time she went out of town, he committed another murder.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Here's what I find so strange, though, is before his son finds a human skull, by the way, his wife never found any bones. I mean, we live on a ton of acreage out in Colorado, and it used to be an old, cow farm, and I don't know. I find old cow bones all the time. Never found human bones, although it's said that Al Capone used to run around here, and there's... a bunch of documentation from this 1919 FBI document that I found about the area and all the like mob activity and stuff. And I believe that on this document, our ranch is the goat farm that is mentioned there just based on the logistics of where they say it is. But so that maybe at some point, hopefully not, I will find a human bone. But my point is, we live on like 70 acres. Unless his wife never walked around their, you know, 18 acre property or whatever, I don't know how she didn't see these bones. But in the fall of 1994, his son did. His son found the remains of one of his own dad's murder victims. His adolescent son found a human skull just 60 yards from the back porch of the home. And he used it to scare his sister, like put it on a stick and like run around and chase her or whatever. He eventually told his mom about it. This kid was just 13, by the way, and finds a human skull. He tells his mom, which actually did freak her out. It terrified her. And she asked him where he found it, but didn't really ask any further questions. But the son went and showed the mom, to which she then found the rest of an entire human skeleton. But instead of calling the police, she goes and asks Herb about it, like, what is this? And frankly, his explanation is not bad. He tells his wife that, oh, it's just been in the garage for a while. It was one of my dad's old anatomical, you know, skeletons he used, you know, in his office, or maybe something he got from school. And she buys it. She just is like, okie dokie. Maybe it was because around this time, they had bigger fish to fry. His thrift stores were falling behind on bills. They were, you know, behind on bills for their home. Their marriage was falling apart, and frankly had been falling apart for the entire 25 years. And they would inevitably get a divorce a couple years later. But they go back and forth for a long time. He moved into the in-law suite on their property, and every chance he got, he would go see this like 1950s cover band called Dr. Bob. I'm not quite sure, but he was a big fan of them. And I should find a clip of that. I wonder if that band ever found out that Herb Baumeister was a huge fan of theirs. That would haunt me for the rest of my life if I were them. So meanwhile, if you'll remember, Tony Harris tried to help crack the case on who was responsible for his friend going missing. He's the one that went home with Herb and the only one seemingly to have left Fox Hollow Farms alive. Well, a second chance encounter with Herb Baumeister, who Tony knew as Brian Smart, happened when Tony was at one of the gay bars with his friends. And in walks Herb, or Brian Smart. And Tony tells his friend to leave the table and go get that guy's license plate number immediately. Herb then walks up to Tony and his other friends, and they all start chatting, and Tony's trying to keep him there while his friend gets the license plate number. And so Tony tells Herb to tell his friends, like, hey, tell my friends about that neat trick and how to do it, which Herb got very uncomfortable by. Eventually, the friend was able to obtain the license plate number, and Herb and Tony and his group of friends go their separate ways that night. Tony then gives the information on the license plate to a detective for the Indiana PD named Mary Wilson. And she actually cares. She runs a plate and finds it's registered to an old address for Herb Baumeister. But then she's actually able to track Herb to his new thrift stores. So she starts going to the thrift store. She spends 2 weeks just browsing and waiting for him to come in. And finally, one day he walks in. Mary approaches him and she asks him if he would be able to answer a few questions about some missing people in the area. He agrees to talk the next day when she comes back. She tells him that there is a number of gay men who have gone missing from gay bars around Indianapolis. And he says, oh, well, I'm married. I've never been to, you know, a gay bar in Indianapolis. I wouldn't know anything about that. And she said, oh, well, that's strange because the license plate pulled from your vehicle, and which is how I was able to find you, was parked outside a gay bar. To which he then starts to give tidbits of information. He's like, okay, yeah, I go to gay bars. Like, my wife can't find out about this. Like, yes, that part's true, but I don't know why, you know, these guys would have gone missing. I've had no part of it. So she thinks she's onto something, but she doesn't have enough to get a warrant to go search his house. So 2 years go by. Initially, she also asks his wife, Julie, if she can search their home, to which Julie says no, because she goes to Herb first, and he's like, that's crazy. A disgruntled employee who's mad at me is making up these stories that I'm responsible for gay men going missing. And she's like, okay, I believe it. So she tells Detective Wilson, nope, you guys can't search the property. So 2 years go by, and the marriage between Julie and Herb is up and down, very rocky. But Julie finally hits her final straw when Herb tells her that he's going to take the kids on this like 6-week military kind of training camp thing, and they're going to be gone for 6 weeks. And she's like, no. And so she's mad enough and suspicious enough that she calls up Detective Wilson and says, yes, you can search our house. Well, Herb must have been privy to this because he is out like a bat out of hell, not at the house. And he also has taken a stack of those videotapes with him, which have never been recovered. And the other videotapes they went through was just a bunch of old episodes of Dallas, which does seem kind of fitting. When the police search crew arrive at Fox Hollow Farm, they almost immediately find hundreds of bone fragments scattered around a burn fire, as well as dozens of hundreds of teeth. Literally, probably within an eye shot of the home. Within 30 minutes, because they were told to put an orange flag near where they find, you know, human bones. Within 30 minutes, there are over 100 orange flags designating where the bones were. With a warrant out for his arrest, Herb fled to Ontario, where he committed suicide at Pinery Provincial Park on Lake Huron by shooting himself in the head with a .357 Magnum. He left a 3-page suicide note, not mentioning the murders or bones found on his property. It was written on a yellow notepaper. He said he regretted messing up the park. He felt badly about his broken marriage and failing business. But again, it did not mention the remains of his victims or admit to any crime. He described items left on his trip, including his intention to kill himself in a different place, but seeing children there, he had changed his mind. As of January 2024, forensic experts continue working in an effort to identify nearly 10,000 human remains recovered from Fox Hollow Farm. John Lee Johnny Bear was 20 when he went missing on May 28, 1993. Jeffrey Allen Jeff Jones, 31, went missing on July 6, 1993. Richard Douglas Hamilton Jr., 20, went missing on July 31, 1993. Allen Lee Livingston, 27, also went missing on August 6, 1993. His remains were recovered in the initial search of the farm in 1996, but remained unidentified until October 2023. Stephen Sperlin Hale, 28, went missing on April 1, 1994. Alan Wayne Bursard, 28, went missing on June 6, 1994. Roger Allen Goodlett, 33, went missing on July 22, 1994. Michael Frederick Mike Kiern, 45, last seen March 31, 1995. Manuel Resendez, 34, last seen at a gay bar in downtown Indianapolis on August 6, 1993. In January 2024, Hamilton County Coroner announced the identification of remains that were recovered in 1996 from Fox Hollow Farm. Human remains recovered from the property matched a family reference sample that was submitted in early 2023, and this led to the identification. Authorities have also publicly and posthumously linked the unsolved disappearance of Jerry Williams Comer, 34, to Herb. Williams Comer was last seen in Indianapolis on August 8, 1995. After his disappearance, his vehicle was found at Castleton Square Mall. As a young gay man, Williams Comer fit the profile of Herb's victims, despite the fact that his remains were never recovered from Herb's residence. Not to at all discredit the victims of Herb's heinous crimes, but another interesting anecdote is Fox Hollow Farm has been the subject of many paranormal investigations and stories written in from people who have visited Fox Hollow Farm. And I'll just give you one account of those hauntings. So, a family purchases it after it had been rejected many times by other people or they moved out. And when the wife returned home, she found her husband painting a portion of the house, and she walked towards him. And the couple started speaking about how beautiful the house would look after he finishes painting it. As they were speaking, the wife noticed a man clothed in a red t-shirt come out of the nearby woods into their property. He stood there eerily staring at them and the house. Before she could tell her husband about it, the man went back into the woods and disappeared. Still, she ended up telling her husband about the man, but he told her that it was quite common for a house with such a dark history to have stalkers. She accepted this as their new reality and tried not to give it too much attention. Later that night, as they were cleaning up dishes, he heard someone knock on the door. His hands were full of soap, and as he was washing off before going to check on who was knocking on the door knocking got louder and more aggressive. He yelled, "I'm coming," but the knocks did not stop. Assuming it was Rob or Vicky calling for an emergency, he rushed to the door, and as soon as he could and opened it, when he opened it, all he could see was emptiness. They thought maybe there was an intruder. Another time, slowly turning his head to see what it was, he saw a man in a red t-shirt standing right next to him. He ran out of the woods in fear, and the dog that he was with followed him into his apartment on the property. And he peeked out through the window to see if the man followed him. That night went by with him constantly looking out the window, hoping that the man did not return. The next day, he told the husband and wife about this previous night. When he told them about it, the man in the red t-shirt in the woods, Vicky, the wife, immediately connected him as the man that she had seen the previous day. However, when they saw the man in the red shirt again, the next time they saw him, he did not have legs. So a family eventually buys the house after it had been, you know, turned away by so many people and people moved out, and they had friends over one day. And one of these friends, his name was Joe, he swam back to his friends and he was pulled under in the pool. So they're downstairs in that basement pool and he's pulled under and he feels fingers choking him. The other friends watched Joe put his hands to his neck, panic like he'd never seen on his friend's face before. The friend Joe managed to escape and got all of his friends out of the pool before it could get them. If you listen to the live episode that My Favorite Murder did on this in Indianapolis, they have, I think, two listener stories that write in of people from Indiana that have actually visited the place. And they may say it on another mini-sode. It's also kind of what gave me the idea to do this episode because, like, a fairly recent mini-sode that they did, someone wrote in about their experience going to Fox Hollow Farms. But if you look it up, there's plenty of stories online about hauntings, and Ghost Adventures did an episode, and yeah. So anyways, thank you guys so much for listening to this horrible story, but I hope you enjoyed it as best you can, and again, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week. Love you. Bye.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.